Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. You know, I'm one of those lucky people who almost never has a headache. I can't remember when I last had one, but I know that a bad headache, and I have some friends who get really bad headaches from time to time, and certainly their mood and outlook is not good, and I could see why. They're in a lot of pain. And maybe you deal with multiple headaches, sometimes weekly or sometimes even more. And I tell you what, when that happens, you're going to want to, I know you're going to want to have it relieved. And we're lucky to have a couple of experts with us today who can help us keep our bodies in good shape overall. And we'll share some important information about how to deal with chronic headaches. Lori Tyne Brody, one of our guests, physical therapist, athletic trainer with UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center. Lori, thanks for joining us again.
Good to be here, Larry.
And Bill Boisenault. Bill is a senior physical therapist at the UW Hospitals and Clinic. And Bill, always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Great to be back.
Well, you know, there's more than one type of headache, obviously. And there are some chronic headaches. There are even different types of chronic headaches, are there not?
Yeah, there are. There's a number of different classification systems that are out there. There's one group, the International Headache Society. It's under the World Health Organization. They've got a classification system. And my experience has been, both personally and working with patients over the years, that not only are there multiple types of headaches people can get, but there are many people who have more than one type of headache, because there are so many different causes of headaches.
Yeah.
And so trying to sort that out of, all right, if you have more than one headache, then, of course, treatment's going to be different based on the underlying etiology or cause. And the headache can be from a local structure, I mean, muscles or our temporomandibular joint. Stress, emotions can certainly trigger a headache. Headaches can be associated with neck and shoulder problems. And so they're very, very complex.
I know there's one type called cervicogenic, is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's a headache that is, origin is in the cervical spine. That's the cervicogenic. The cervical spine is the origin, and treatments there are really focused on some mobilization, manipulation, some manual therapy techniques to the cervical spine in order to decrease the headache pain.
And by manual therapy, you mean?
Usually some joint mobilization. Sometimes the joints themselves, the small joints in your neck, can be inflamed or irritated or have decreased movement. So mobilizing them with some specific techniques to get those joints moving again can decrease the pain that comes from those that gets relayed as a headache.
Okay. So go ahead, Bill.
Yeah, as you say, there were studies that were done in the 1930s and 40s where they injected an irritant into some of the joints of the neck and ligaments and mapped out pain patterns. And there were a number of levels or spots that referred up to the facial area or the head area causing a headache. And there's also multiple studies, the same thing from certain muscles have pain referral patterns that can go up into the head. And so Lori's right. We treat locally. If the joint is just stiff and needs to move better, a muscle needs to be stretched or strengthened. And posture has a lot to do with it. We spend a lot of time working people at their workstation or going into our discussion last month, sleeping positions and pillows can make a big difference in terms of stress and strain on muscles and joints that could result in a headache.
So a physical therapist probably is someone who can help with this, maybe a chiropractor as well? Or
possibly, if manipulation is indicated. So some people get relief from a manipulation. And, you know, there's a lot of research out there on different kinds of interventions for these problems. And, you know, none of them are terribly definitive about, you know, this is the answer or that's the answer. And it's probably because there's so many different types of headaches and it's very difficult to categorize or classify them. And the interventions are applied across a broad range of different kinds of headaches. So there might be certain subgroups that do better with certain interventions, but we're not clear what those subgroups are yet. Or what the indicators are for certain interventions, as in, oh, if you have these signs and symptoms, you'll do well with trigger point injections, or if you have these signs and symptoms, you'll do well with the manipulation.
Okay. And that, you know, you also mentioned tension headaches. Is that sort of the same as the cervicogenic, or are those types of headaches the same? Or?
Technically, no. No, right. The cervicogenic are initiated from the cervical spine, usually from the static structures of the cervical spine, whereas the tension tends to be more muscular-based, and the tension headaches are often treated with trigger point interventions, either manual techniques to try to minimize the irritability of those trigger points, or sometimes injections into those trigger points with cortisone or a steroid or an anti-inflammatory or an analgesic to get those trigger points to calm down.
And there's been some research, of course, some research on all this that and treating it.
Yeah, there have been a number of studies looking at the efficacy of, you know, massage and exercise and manipulation and different types of medications and nerve blocks. And I think Lori's right. The key is matching that headache with, you know, the cause of that headache with the appropriate treatment. And as I mentioned earlier, what makes it difficult is that there's people who have more than one type of headache, and really difficult sorting that out. It's like you can't approach it, you know, belly pain. There isn't one treatment for belly pain.
Right.
What's causing the belly pain? And same thing with the headache. And there's so many different causes. So, you know, if you have more than an occasional headache, a headache that's really debilitating, you want to go to somebody who's an expert in that area, who works with lots of people. I know when Lori and I see somebody, we have certain tests and measures we use to determine, all right, is this someone who can possibly respond to what a physical therapist can offer, or do they need to see someone else?
Yeah.
I think one of the other challenges about headaches is, unlike some conditions where you have an intervention and shortly thereafter you feel better, with headaches, particularly chronic headaches, you get changes in the nervous system, the peripheral and central nervous system, that takes time to revert back. So the longer you've had these headaches, the more changes you get in your central nervous system that takes a while to undo and unravel, if you will. So you really have to be patient and stick with the intervention.
We have callers online. Hey, you can join in, too, by the way. We're talking, well, we've been dealing with headaches here, and certainly are willing and able to take more questions relating to it, but we can also talk about other kinds of aches and pains as well. So the number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. And Ilana in Madison, thank you very much for calling. Your turn.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. So I'm a runner, and I'm training for a marathon in May. And I've noticed that after my longer runs, for instance, I did 14 miles on Friday. After my longer runs, my neck and my shoulders are incredibly tight, stiff, kind of painful, and I'm wondering if you have any advice for what I can do to prevent that, and also what I should be doing afterward to kind of loosen them up and get rid of the soreness.
So when did this start? Was there a certain mileage threshold that started?
I really noticed it on Friday after the 14-mile run, but I also noticed it actually today, although less so. Today was a shorter run.
Okay. And do you remember anything you did in the week prior to your 14-mile run that may have precipitated this?
Not anything.
Okay.
Not anything that I don't usually do.
Okay. And this was one of your longer runs?
Yeah. I mean, so it happened after 14 miles was the first time I really noticed it. And then I noticed it today after 7 miles. I mean, that's an area where I'm very, you know, I tend toward, you know, tension.
Okay.
There.
Right.
It's been pretty, you know, I really noticed it on Friday. And again, I noticed it. I noticed it today. So Friday and Monday were days I ran outside.
Right.
I didn't notice it yesterday after running inside on the treadmill.
Okay.
So I don't know if maybe the cold has something to do with it.
Well, that was what I was kind of going back in my head trying to remember how cold it was on Friday. It seems to me it was pretty darn cold on Friday. So, you know, you're going to hold more tension when you're cold. You probably move your head less because, you know, you're you're in a position to avoid the wind. You're not looking around as much because you're just trying to get through it. And the cold probably does have something to do with it. So particularly if you didn't notice it after running inside. So
no, I didn't. Oh,
yeah, so that could be a contributing factor. So you may just have to watch your temperature, make sure you're dressed warm enough. And afterwards, just stretch, move your head around, maybe put some heat on to relax if you've been holding a lot of tension in there, and do some stretching exercises. If you are going to go out, you may want to warm up a little bit more before you go out so that you're not cold when you start out on your run. And then, because really what it boiled down to for me was form. You know, are you holding a lot of tension in your neck and shoulders when you run? And, you know, part of me said, well, maybe you should see somebody and have your gait examined. But it may have been just situational in that you were cold, and so you held more tension in there on that day.
Yeah, I would agree. The fact you didn't have it on the treadmill takes me away. I was thinking there are people who are running those distances. It's not just your legs and trunk that are working, but your upper body's working as well. And sometimes doing some weight training for the shoulder, upper back, and neck area can be helpful from an endurance standpoint, because muscles do fatigue, and the more tired you get, it changes your posture. Mm-hmm. But again, as I mentioned, the fact you didn't have it on the treadmill would steer me away a little bit from that.
Right, exactly.
I was just thinking, of my own trips out in the cold and jogging and so forth. You know, there's ice, there's snow. Mm-hmm. I think I'm tensing
right.
up a bit more
right.
just to avoid, I'm worried about slipping
right.
and falling.
Right,
so.
Right. Yeah, that's certainly another factor.
Yeah, right. It's not your normal running form because of those things.
Right, exactly. But I do agree with Bill that doing some weight training for your upper body, particularly in a runner, if you're not doing that, would be a great asset to your training.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you so much. That's really helpful.
All right. Yep. Thanks, Alana, for calling. Appreciate your call. Sue from Neshota wondered about knee pain and relieving knee pain, and she wondered if you thought that ultrasound can help in relieving knee pain. Any experience?
Generally not. Ultrasound is typically something that that is not used in knee pain. The key in knee pain is to figuring out the cause of it, looking at the mechanics, looking at posture, looking at movement, looking at strength, mobility, and so on, and then designing an intervention program to deal with that. But typically, ultrasound is not part of the mix.
Yeah, especially by itself. I mean, those kinds of modalities are rarely used. If they use it all, it's in conjunction with exercise and manual therapy and lots of patient education. But there's not a lot of evidence to support it.
Yeah. What does ultrasound actually do to the body? Is it?
There's diagnostic ultrasound, and that's different than therapeutic ultrasound, and it's a form of deep heat. So when you put superficial heat, such as a heating pad or something like that, on your skin, your circulatory system is designed to help carry the excess heat away from there so that you don't injure those tissues, and that's why it gets warm and red. So unfortunately, the heat doesn't really penetrate deeper down to the muscles where you're trying to get it. Ultrasound can do that by virtue of the sound waves.
Gotcha.
So it's a form of deep heat.
Rich in La Crosse, thanks a lot for calling. Hi there.
Hi. My problem is I have degeneration in my vertebrae in my back. I had an MRI, and three of them are fractured. I started to notice the last couple months that my hands are starting to go numb, both of them, at different times. If I'm sleeping or right now I'm driving a car, and my right hand, I feel numbness in my left hand. I have the steering wheel, and starting to numb up. I don't know if there's some type of therapy I can do for this, or if it's just something I have to live with. I don't know what I can do about it, if there's anything I can do. I have been exercising with light weights 6 times a week, and I do elliptical probably 3 or 4 times a week, but I don't know if I'm just holding off something or what. I'm kind of confused right now and don't know what to do.
Okay.
So, Rich, the degeneration, is it in your low back or in your neck?
It's about in the middle back.
The mid-back.
But I don't know if it's spreading or whatnot.
Okay,
but,
all right.
And then I also have scoliosis because of that.
Okay, all right. Well, the hand numbness, it can either be something like carpal tunnel where, you know, there's nerves that run through the wrist that can get compressed over time and cause numbness. It could be related to your neck. The fact that it's both hands, you know, suggests that at least your neck has to be considered. And it's not something that – I wouldn't look at it like you have to live with this. The exercises that you're doing may or may not be an issue. But how long has the numbness in your hands been going on?
This has been like the last couple months, and it seems to be getting worse. I've noticed that, like, I'll wake up in the middle of the night, and it'll be fall asleep, and then I move, and it's good for maybe 5 or 10 minutes, and then they're going numb again. And I end up falling asleep, but I always wake up with numb hands.
Yeah.
I'm just getting kind of concerned about it that, you know, this shouldn't be happening this often. And like I say, I'm driving right now, and I'm feeling it in my hand, and also I'm holding a phone, and I'm starting to feel it too. So
yeah.
I have to constantly kind of move my hands just to get rid of that numbness. So
okay, well, I would agree with you. It's if time was going to take care of this, you'd be getting better, not getting worse. I'd go in and be seen. You could see your primary care physician, Rich, as a starting point, or you could see a physical therapist. They would examine both your wrist and hands as well as your neck. And it may be that there are some certain exercises or a certain type of pillow you should be using, or it may be that some additional testing needs to be done to figure out exactly where the nerves are being irritated. But yeah, I wouldn't mess around with this anymore.
Yeah. There you go. Good luck, Rich. Thank you for calling. Jane in Shorewood, it's your turn. Hi, Jane.
Hi. My son has had cluster headaches for over 25 years, and he lives in Oshkosh, Wisconsin. And I wonder if you know of anyone or any studies that might help him.
Hmm. Boy, that's terrible.
Well, I know cluster headaches can be very debilitating, and the name describes what they are. They tend to come in clusters, can be really intense, and then sometimes people can go, you know, months between headache clusters like this. I'm not aware of anything in the physical therapy literature in terms of, you know, manipulation or massage or a certain type of exercise that can put a dent into this type of headache. I'm assuming he's seen a physician or a headache specialist regarding this.
Yes, through everything. And here's the thing. He's documented all the headaches, all the medication, all the neurologists for 25 years. And if he could pass this on, it might help someone else.
Yes.
Wow. Yeah.
I guess the best way to do that is to talk to his physician. They can write up case studies that get published in journals, and that would be a way to share that information. Yeah. Or if there are blogs around for patients who have cluster headaches, that would be another place to share that information that might be helpful to other people with the same problem.
Yeah. Yeah. But there's nothing really...
It's more of a vascular and sympathetic nervous system driven headache.
Okay.
It's very different than the cervicogenic headaches that we described before that can be associated with joints that are stiff or altered posture or muscles that are tight. It's a completely different animal in terms of what's driving the headache, causing the headache.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much for calling. I appreciate your call. Has to be a very frustrating.
Yeah.
They're very debilitating.
Very debilitating. Huh? And I'm just thinking about how do you keep a job and how do you work and
right.
relationships, the whole thing. Sally in Sussex, it's your turn. Thank you for calling, Sally.
Hi. I'll start by saying I suffered from headaches as a young child. I'm 64 now. I had a doctor, when I was in my 40s, said I suffered from both migraines and tension headaches. When I went through menopause, I lost the migraines. But the so-called tension headaches have gotten more extreme. Now, about 3 years ago, another problem I have is I'm a night clencher when I sleep. And I was having some jaw issues, and my dentist sent me to a TMJ specialist. And so I did go for a year wearing this splint. One of the things that went along with that was physical therapy, and you know, you talk about these points. They also talked about certain pressure points that I would massage. You know, they taught me different techniques. And this really helped reduce the frequency of the headaches for a while. But after a while, you know, they came back again, along with a very tightness in my neck, to the point that I couldn't turn my head to the right very far without it being very painful. The headache center from the back of my neck down to my shoulder blades. Now, a new doctor had sent me to an orthopedic person because I was complaining about this shoulder pain in the neck, and he discovered that I had terrible inflammation in my upper back, and I took naproxen over a period of time. Oh, I'd say I've been going to him since the end of August. Now, that really helped, along with some other things he suggested, to make me much looser, get rid of that pain. But I still get these terrible headaches, and they're getting longer in duration. Where I used to have them a day, now I'll get them for 3 days, and just very, very painful.
Well, it's not you're describing what we mentioned earlier. Some people have more than one type of headache, and I'm glad going through menopause that took care of your migraines, you know, for the most part. You know, part of what you described, Sally, sounds like a cervicogenic headache. When you have difficulty turning your head in one direction and it's painful and there's stiffness, you know, that's the kind of headache that can respond to manual therapy, you know, some mobilization, manipulation, massage, not only of your neck but also your upper back and your shoulders. And posture can make a huge difference, whether it's when you're driving, sitting at a computer, or you're sleeping at night. And so the things you mentioned before that the physical therapist did along with your night split for your temporomandibular joint, there's good treatment that can be applied directly to the face and the head area. But for you, it needs to extend from that area down into the back and shoulders. And the same approach. You work on flexibility, you work on strength, you work on mobility, and a lot of postural education that my guess is would put a dent in this current headache that you're dealing with.
Mm.
Yes, and they did stress, the TMJ physical therapist did stress posture and did say that my posture was very bad.
Yeah.
But I feel like I have improved it. How do you find a physical therapist who would know how to treat this cervogenic type of headache? The physical therapist for the TMJ only did work with the jaw muscles.
Okay.
And the head.
Okay. I think you could call any general physical therapy clinic, the outpatient orthopedic clinic. You can ask if there's somebody who has specialty training in the spine. And especially the cervical spine and the combined with the temporomandibular joint. Most clinics have at least one person on staff who has expertise in that area. And considering how long you've had these types of headaches, I would go to a PT who is somewhat of a subspecialist. But you can call if there's a hospital close by or private practice close by, and that's who I would ask for to see.
And good luck. Thank you so much for calling, Sally. I wish you well. I want to give Carol a chance to join us from Kenosha. Carol, hi to you. Thank you for calling.
Hi. My problem is quite related to Sally's. After my migraine experience was very similar. After my whole adult life, the severe migraines had tapered off after menopause. I'm 77 now, and after a vitrectomy 5 years ago, both my ophthalmologist and the retinal specialist began to talk to me and explain about trigeminal neuralgia. And I have had TMJ dysfunction my whole life. And I now believe that some of the pain that's always been just kind of brushed off as, well, it's just your TMJ, has probably been trigeminal neuralgia. Now, my question is, and you kind of touched on it, In Kenosha, I have just become aware of a center for myofascial release through cranial sacral therapy. What is your opinion on that possibly helping trigeminal neuralgia?
Well, the trigeminal nerve is one of the cranial nerves related to the brain and the upper and mid part of the cervical spine. And it innervates, trigeminal nerve innervates muscles that we chew with and also innervates area of the skin on the jaw, the face, and around the eyes. And you can develop a neuropathy of that nerve like you can elsewhere. And the pain can be very intense, you know, burning and aching, but a lot of burning and hypersensitivity can go along with it. There is a connection between the trigeminal nerve and the cervical spine. I'm not sure how much hard science there is, but in theory, if you have issues with your neck, that could be changing the neurological input that influences the trigeminal nerve activity. But again, I'm not sure, Laura, if you're aware of any hard science behind that. But
no.
Anatomically, there's a connection between the neck and the trigeminal nerve. So it can be a source of headache and facial pain. The myofascial release and craniosacral therapy, that has been around for decades and decades. It's kind of falls under the umbrella of manual therapy. Maybe you could call it a type of massage. It's generally very light pressure in many cases. Again, there's not a lot of research. There's a lot of anecdotal evidence out there. I think generally there's very little harm that can be done with it. But related to, especially what you're describing here, I'm not aware of any specific research behind it.
Thanks very much, Carol, for calling. I appreciate your call. A caller, Dawn, just related in a way, I guess, had wanted to share that her mother had horrible headaches for decades. It was only after heart surgery and being put on blood thinners that they went away.
I wonder what she had heart surgery for, if she had some block where she was not getting perfused or something.
Oh, something like that could definitely impact headaches, I would think. Yeah,
could be.
David in South Milwaukee, your turn. Hi, David.
Hello. Speaking of cold weather, I had a dental appointment last week, and I had to walk about a mile to the dental appointment. I was going to go somewhere afterwards, so I was carrying a rather heavy bag. And to keep my arms closed and to make it easier on myself, I swung the bag over my shoulder. And so I had a rather heavy weight on one shoulder and on the way back on the other shoulder. And then at the dental appointment, they had a remodeling, and the new seats that they had reversed the C-curve in the back. So for 2 or 3 hours, I was sitting backwards as far as that C-curve. Well, I developed the pain inside my hip towards the center of the hip, and it hurts when I plant my foot and twist, and it hurts when I try and do a one-legged quad. So just to give you an idea of the kind of pain it is, I'm wondering how long should I wait before I see somebody with this, and what can I do in the meantime to kind of test it and get back to my aerobics?
So when you say it's in your hip, where in your hip? Is it on the outside of your hip, kind of out by your hip bone, or is it back in deep in your buttocks?
It seems like it's near the spine, and lately it seems to be going into the buttocks.
Okay, so it's more up in the spine and not so much the hip.
Yes, it's near the top of the hip, but I would say it's more in the hip than on the outside of the hip than above the hip.
Okay. All right. Well, anytime you carry an asymmetrical load, so if you have a load in one hand, it really increases the weight-bearing forces on the opposite side as the muscles and the joints on that side try to stabilize. And they have to, if you think about your back as a teeter-totter with the spine in the middle, if you put a load on one end, then the muscles and other tissues on the opposite side have to work hard enough to counterbalance that load. So being asymmetrical is pretty hard on your spine. So and then, you know, carrying that heavy load, then sitting in an awkward position, that combination was probably bad for your spine. So I'd start with some stretches, some knee to chest stretches. Do any of those things, have you tried those things, and do they help with your symptoms at all?
No, I tried those things. It seems like it's the twisting motion that seems to get to it a little bit.
Okay. Are you able to do your normal daily activities?
I can walk, but, you know, I can't walk like I used to. I used to do a power walk, and okay. I can feel that little twinge going on. It's not real painful to do that, but I feel a little twinge going on, but mainly when I plant and twist up that.
Okay. And what other activities do you do? Is this limiting you from other things?
Not a lot.
Okay.
No.
All right. So, you know, in terms of seeing somebody, it would certainly be useful. It'd probably speed things along. They could give you some very specific activities to do to try to decrease your symptoms, particularly in rotation. They might start with some things in other planes and work your way up to rotation. They'd examine you and look for specific mobility loss, weaknesses, et cetera. And I think it'd be useful in terms of preventing a recurrence of this because clearly there's some underlying issue there that it didn't tolerate that loading. And it sounds like you're a pretty active guy. So a visit or two to a physical therapist can examine your posture, how you move, your underlying mobility or any weaknesses, and help create a program to prevent this from coming back again.
There you go. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call, David. I want to give Louise in Green Bay a chance to join us next. Louise, hi. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. I recently injured my gluteus maximus, and it is kind of making me upset because I don't feel very comfortable in the pain that I feel when I'm trying to do anything. I've done a little bit of reading on it, and it says things like going up the hill when you're walking is not too particularly good. And I like to do yoga and other Zumba and other workouts, and I just don't feel comfortable doing it because it hurts. And it kind of radiates up a bit to where, you know, the waistline, hip area. It's about the area that's causing grief is probably about 5 inches from the waistline down.
Okay, Bill?
And so injured, was there an injury that you can point back, say, this is what
no.
happened?
Okay. No, I think it was just overworking the muscle.
Okay, all right. Because it sounds like you're involved with a number of exercise classes.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, the gluteus maximus is a muscle that we use a lot for walking, bending, and when we walk uphill or upstairs, it has to work a little bit harder. You know, generally, if you pull a muscle, you overwork a muscle, you start feeling better within a few days. There's some stiffness, and then the stiffness works out. If you're at a stage, Louise, where either it's not better at all, or in fact it's getting worse, then I'd go in and be seen. It could be coming from your back. It could be related to your hip as to why this maybe is not getting better on top of whatever the gluteus maximus is trying to recover from. It sounds like you're very active, all good things to do. But if you're at this stage, you should be getting better. If it was simply a muscle strain, you should be getting better by now.
Right. I agree with that. If you've particularly if you've been involved in exercise classes for a long time and you didn't have a big change in what you did, it wasn't like all of a sudden one day you did 100 squats or, you know, 50 clams with a band or something like that. If you haven't really changed your routine, you shouldn't be getting muscle soreness at this point. So it may be referred from someplace else, as Bill suggested, and that should be sorted out.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you for calling. And Linda in Madison, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I don't have a specific problem, but I want to say thank you because I've heard you talk about plantar fasciitis, and you mentioned night splints a couple of years ago. And as soon as I got insurance coverage, went out, the last pair that I have right now were custom made. I have almost no flare-ups, and when I do, I can minimize them by, you know, wearing the splint, you know, when I'm sleeping or when I know I'm not going to be moving around much, you know, watching TV or whatnot, and it's awesome. Plus, your advice about being proactive as a patient and seeking physical therapy helped me this summer with recovering and preventing shoulder strain, and also working on a hand therapy issue for a mallet joint on my right pinky, and being diligent with the physical therapy at home, and because I do that and got in right away, one session was all I needed. I just need to keep up on the exercises. So thank you so much.
Oh, man. Well, thanks, Linda.
That was nice on a Monday, wasn't it?
Yeah, you are kidding. Yes.
Yeah, I have a night splint that I keep under my bed, and I hand it out. You know, I have people pass me, oh, man, can you tell me what you do about plantar fasciitis? I just say, well, let me bring you my splint. You know, and they wear it for a month or so, and then they bring it back, and they say, wow, it's great. Yeah. But, you know, she also made a really important point in that you have to follow through. You know, someone gives you something to do, well, you've got to do it, you know.
Yeah.
Makes a big difference.
Yeah, when people come in to see a physical therapist once or twice a week for maybe a half an hour or an hour, that leaves a lot of hours of the week that that need to be filled, and people need to follow through and watch what they do and sometimes modify things. And it's a weight that they need to control it as opposed to the pain controlling them. And there's lots of things that we do to teach people, to empower people, really is the goal.
That was a great call. Thank you so much for calling. Well, they're all good calls, as a matter of fact. Here's Jeannie and Brilliant with a call. Hi, Jeannie.
Hi, thank you. I have tennis elbow that's been bothering me for the last year, and I'm wondering what can I do? And here's what I've done so far. For a while, it was affecting the grip, and so I just looked online, did my Google medicine, and found that, you know, squeezing a ball or lifting weights, squeezing like a hand weight, lifting it has really helped strengthen some of the muscles in the area. But otherwise, I just can't get it to go away. So I don't feel like I'm lacking strength now, but it's just so annoying. And I am active, mostly with bike riding, where I do a couple thousand miles a year. And so when I'm riding there, I try to change my position of my arms. And also periodically, I'll just take a water bottle out of the water bottle holder, squeeze the neck of it for like 5 or 6 seconds. That helps actually with some of the soreness in the elbow. Any other ideas?
Well, first of all, have you seen anyone? Are you sure it's classic garden variety tennis elbow? Do you self-diagnose?
I have not. No, I've only self-diagnosed. But okay. That knob on top of the elbow, you know, the outer side.
Yeah.
If I touch that, it's really tender.
Okay. All right. And if you hold your hand out in front of you, palm down, and try to hold your middle finger up against resistance, does that hurt?
Nope.
Okay. Well, maybe it'd be worth having someone look at it just to verify that that's what it is. And it sounds like you've done some of the right things. The weight that you did, tell me what you did with the weight.
Okay. I took one of the, like, hand weights,
right,
where there's little weight on each side, just an 8-pound, and I gripped it in the middle, and then whatever way it sort of seemed like it hurt.
Okay.
I would sort of do it that way. I made myself squeeze it because I figured that's how it's strengthening the muscles that go in that area.
Okay. So then you did it like with your palm down?
I did it a variety of ways.
Okay. All right. So it may be that you just didn't have enough resistance. So for this problem, we tend to focus on the lowering phase with your palm down, not the lifting phase. So you will be limited in the amount of weight you can use by how much you can lift. You can lower far more than you can lift. Okay.
Yeah.
So the key is to use a heavier weight and use your other hand to lift it up and do just the lowering phase.
Okay.
So use your other hand to lift it up and lower
the lifting phase.
No, the lowering phase. That's
okay.
That's the key. That's the ticket. So you could try using a heavier weight and using that strategy. The other piece that I guess you haven't tried is a forearm strap, and what that does is you can get what's called a tennis elbow strap, and you put it around just below your elbow, and what it does is it creates a new origin for that muscle so it doesn't pull right on where it attaches to the bone. But that is that's sort of a temporary technique to help with the pain. I would call it marginally therapeutic.
Yeah,
it's just helped to get you through the day.
I've had different flare-ups of this over the years, and usually, you know, some of the weight stuff helps take care of it and goes away. And I've tried that, the strap, and haven't had much luck.
Right.
So I'll try
the
exercises, though, with the lowering.
Yeah, yeah, and see how you do it. And if you get stuck, go see somebody for a visit or two, and they may need to just fine-tune what you're doing just a little bit, like I just did, and to get it just right for you.
Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Talking about dealing with aches and pains and sprains and strains with Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you listening in on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here as we talk about all kinds of things, addressing chronic headaches through physical therapy and other physical therapy issues with Bill Boisenault and Lori Tyne Brody. Join in at 800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Lois in La Crosse up next. Lois, thanks for waiting.
Hi. I have a question for my daughter, who's 17. She was playing basketball on the 3rd of February and got hit pretty hard across the temple and had a mild concussion from it. She's still having headaches every day. You know, not ranging any higher than maybe a 4 on the pain scale. But until she can get rid of the headaches, they don't want to test her with the impact testing to be able to clear her from the concussion. Is there anything that could be possibly done for her? Any type of exercise or massage or...
Is she under medical care for her concussion?
Well, it was mild concussion, so they really only had her stay home as many days as she needed to rest without any electronics, you know, nothing on her phone or television or anything like that, which is really traumatic for parents.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Yeah.
It gives me a headache thinking about it.
I know.
Yeah.
So, but she's still symptomatic. And so, so what are the medical...
time. It's kind of like a little roller coaster effect. They come and go and come and go.
Okay.
And they haven't really given us anything to do just because they aren't consistent. If they're bad enough, she's one of those children who does not mention anything unless you specifically ask her or unless she's so much in pain that she can't stand it anymore.
Okay.
And then it's like way overboard.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's good information to have as a parent. So, you know, you might have her keep a log of her headache pain, you know, on a daily basis throughout the day so you can track it better. And I would have her continue to follow with, is she seeing her physician, a family practice physician, a sports medicine physician?
It is a family practice doctor who's trained in taking care of kids that have had concussions.
Okay, good. All right.
Right person.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, from a physical therapy perspective, I don't think we would do anything at this point.
Yeah, in terms of exercise or massage, it would do, if the massage may give some short-term temporary relief if there's some muscle tightness associated with it. If this physician has expertise in concussion, I would feel more comfortable. I don't know, Laura, would you think... I mean, Lois, you could always call if there's a sports medicine clinic, physical therapy clinic, and just ask them what you're asking us. Or if there's a traumatic brain injury, a head injury clinic associated with a hospital that, if you call and just ask what you've asked us, they may offer something more specific. But in terms of a particular exercise or stretch, I'm not aware.
No. You know, with these, the literature on concussions is still in its infancy. I mean, we've just started on a regular basis impact testing kids. You know, they started off after a concussion that you were in this complete, you know, black hole of brain rest for a certain number of days. Now they're rethinking that advice and as we get more information. So, you know, right now we're still in a place where we don't have real clear definitive recommendations because we don't have enough research on it. So I would say that it's important that she follow with her physician to not go back too soon and I'd say keep a log of these headaches to see if you can find any pattern to them that might be helpful.
And the impact concussion test, you said that they...
Right, right. That's it's a common tool that's used now, particularly in high schools and colleges around the country. And that is they bring the kids in. It's a computerized test. They bring the kids in preseason, and they establish a baseline for that. And it tests a number of cognitive skills and cognitive mobility activities. And then if you sustain a concussion, then they use your impact scores to determine your readiness to return. So they'll retest you and compare you to baseline. So at least we have more information now than we did before, like, you know, run, jump, does your head hurt, do your pupils dilate, okay, you can go back.
Yeah.
See, with her impact test, she was fine with her memory and cognition, but the speed portion of it is where she dropped down like to 10%.
Yeah. The other thing you should know is that there's some recent research that shows that people who have lower impact scores are more likely to tear their ACL. So if she's a basketball player, you might just throw that into the mix.
Oh.
The last game is on Friday.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, boy. Yeah, the season's coming to an end. Yeah. It's going to be very frustrating.
Basketball isn't her most beloved sport. It's softball, and that's starting up. So she's getting a little nervous and impatient.
Yeah.
You know, Lois, coming back to our discussion, if she has some pain with head and neck movements, and not say the headache, but if she turns, we had a caller before, when she turned her head to the right, it was limited and painful. You know, if she has some limited neck range of motion with neck pain, maybe some pain that moves up toward her head, then seeing a physical therapist to work on her neck as kind of a secondary issue might be worthwhile.
No, but nothing that she said, not that she would necessarily tell me right away, but nothing that I've observed from her.
Okay. Yeah, and you would observe it. If he was that limited, you would notice it as she's just doing stuff around the house. So.
Yeah. Right.
Okay. Yeah. Well, good luck, and thank you so much. Lois.
Yeah, let us know as she turns out.
Yeah, one more game to go. Gary and Edgar, it's your turn. Hi, Gary.
Good morning, Larry. Thanks for the show. I love listening to your two guests talk because I've learned a lot, so much over the years.
Thank you.
My problem is it was on Friday the 30th of January, so about 2.5 weeks ago, and I ski every day or snowshoe. I'm very active. I'm 63. And I was skiing out at the end of the day, and I was coming down the hill with a sharp right, and I turned my left ski to slide around the corner like I've done many times, and my right ski caught the track of the classical skiing, and next thing I know, I'm laying on my back, and my right knee on the inside, just above where the big knobby part is, was quite painful. So I skied out, and then I came home. I elevated it, put ice on it, took some ibuprofen, and it is gradually getting better. And I was able to, Saturday, did the Book the Bay ski race across Lake Superior, which, you know, going straight moving, it doesn't bother me when I walk or skiing straight ahead. But there's three things that I do get a twinge out of. And one is I went to a basketball game the other night, was visiting with friends and sat the whole time, got up at the end of the game, and it was let me know that I should have got up earlier.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then if I'm like getting out of a car and that sort of like that little push off you do with your right leg as you turn, I'll get a twinge then. And then this is a strange one, is when I'm sleeping, I can lay and read for a while before I'm going to go to sleep at night, and then I fall asleep, and then during the night when I turn, I don't know what I do wrong, but I'll get a twinge out of it.
Okay, and is that on the inside of your right knee or the outside?
It's on the inside of my right knee.
Okay. And when you landed, the position you landed in, can you tell me again what position your knee was in?
I'm not sure. I'm guessing that my left foot would, you know, like I'm making a 90-degree turn.
Uh-huh.
So my left ski was almost perpendicular to my right as I'm
okay.
going around this turn.
Okay.
And
yep.
that's when I
okay.
caught that track and so yep. I...
Okay. All right. Is your knee swollen?
It was swollen more, but now the swelling overnight will almost go away completely.
Okay.
So I have a little swelling.
Okay. Yeah, you should have that looked at. It's probably it could possibly be a ligament sprain on the inside of your knee. You know, that would be kind of up on that ball on the inside of your knee. And it would not like it if your it generally doesn't like it if your knee's all the way bent or all the way straight. It will hurt to touch on the inside typically. So if you're sleeping and it's resting against your other knee, that can be painful. Could also have torn your meniscus, the cartilage that sits between the two bones. It doesn't like rotation, and it will swell. Doesn't like being in one position for a long period of time because it doesn't get any lubrication or nutrition when you just sit. So it doesn't like being in one position for a long period of time, either sitting, lying down, or anything like that. So, you know, you're a pretty active guy. So mm-hmm. I would suggest going in and getting it looked at so that you know what you're dealing with, and then you can adjust your activities accordingly.
All right.
That'd be my best recommendation.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Boy, lots of...
Yeah. Well, you know, the thing is, when you have a long ski, it's a really long lever arm.
Yeah.
So if you catch it on something, you know, it serves as
a
big wench to torque your knee. So, he probably got a little rotational torque to his knee, and that could have sprained that ligament if he was non-weight bearing. If his weight was on it when he torqued it, it damaged his meniscus.
Yeah. There we go. Talking today with Bill Boisenault and Lori Tyne Brody about dealing with those aches and pains and sprains and strains. Join in at 800-642-1234. We'll take a quick look at the news, weather, and find out what else is in store for us. Then we will be back with Bill and Lori. Well, whether it's an old injury that you just can't seem to get recovered from, or maybe it's a new twinge that has come along, I know you may have some aches and pains to deal with, and it'll be hard to know just what's an annoyance that's eventually going to go away and what really needs some medical attention. Larry Mueller here, and great to have along Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault. Bill's a senior physical therapist at the UW Hospitals and Clinics. Always a pleasure, Bill. Thank
great
you.
Great to be here.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you. And Lori Tyne Brody, physical therapist, athletic trainer with UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center. Thank you, Lori.
It's great to be here.
Lots of callers online with questions, so let's go right to the phones and to Jared in Waukesha, who's been waiting a while. Jared, thanks for waiting.
How you doing?
Great. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
Well, did you ever hear of Jiao, J-O-W? It's a Chinese herb.
Yeah. Well, we haven't heard of it, but we've looked it up and understand that it's often used for with people who work in martial arts, which apparently you do, and that it's used to treat sore muscles and so on. So I guess the question would be back to you, and that is, has it helped you?
I use it every day. Okay. There's 32 different herbs in it.
Mm-hmm.
It does yellow your skin, does have an odor to it. But for my ligaments, tendons, takes bruisings away.
Mm-hmm.
Because it just clogs up, the bruise from the blood. Actually, it pokes at all your nerve endings when it dries up under your skin. So it allows it to allow the body to absorb the blood. It's not recommended for anybody with high or low blood pressure or any issues with that matter. But people that need, like tendons or knee injuries. You could actually move, and it's not a cure all, but
right.
I got it.
So, how long have you been taking it?
Oh, I gotta say, a little over 4 years now.
Okay, and do you ever stop taking it so you notice what happens if you're not taking it, or you take it every day?
Oh, I have.
Uh huh.
Yeah.
And you notice a difference?
Times, Yeah, I mean, it's not, you know, if I feel something, I use it until it subsides, and then you just, you know, work with it. You got to flow with it, you know.
Okay.
Keep motion.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, if it's something that helps keep you doing what you love to do and keeps you active, then and you haven't noticed any ill side effects other than being slightly yellow,
mm-hmm.
Then thanks for that information.
Yeah, something worth looking into. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. I want to give Kay in Eagle River a chance to join us. Kay, hi to you. Thanks for calling.
Yes, thanks for the program, Larry. Yeah, I have a question. I have bursitis in my hip. And I've been to a physical therapist. She's done some, like, massaging, basically. And she told me to do a stretching exercise. And I'm wondering, is there any – I'm fairly active in terms of exercise. And is there anything that I should not be doing, like, say, running or, you know, I do a lot of spinning classes and that sort of thing. Is there anything I should not be doing? And then also, is there – any other exercises I can do? I do. I have one of those foam rollers that mm-hmm. I roll my hip on.
Okay.
And I'm just wondering if there's anything else I can do to help be more proactive in preventing any more inflammation.
So this is a bursitis on the outside of your hip, a trochanteric bursitis?
Yes.
One side, yeah. But not the other?
Yes. Yeah.
Do you know why?
I'm sorry?
Do you know why one side and not the other?
I don't know, and it started with me driving, and when I drove for long periods of time, I get out of the car, and I just couldn't walk upright because I had to get this, like, stiffness out of my hip.
And is it the right one? Is it your gas pedal leg?
Yeah, uh-huh.
Okay. Well, so the first thing is you might want to adjust your car seat. Because there's some trigger there that's setting you up for that. So that'd be the first thing. And then thereafter, you know, if you're seeing a physical therapist, I guess my recommendation would be to go to that person and ask your physical therapist those same questions because that person has examined you. So in terms of foam rollers, it tends to be very good for your iliotibial band to loosen that up. It tends to be tight in people who have trochanteric bursitis. Typically, despite people who are regular exercises, they often have focal weakness in some of their gluteal muscles. So we typically give you some gluteal exercises and look very carefully at your posture and how you move. If you're a runner, we frequently decrease your stride length. We watch your downhill running because downhill running can be an aggravating factor. You know, if you get symptoms when you bike, we look at your bike fit. So, you know, if you don't notice that any of those activities are particular triggers for you, they may not be big contributors, but they could be perpetuating the problem. So I'd ask your PT those questions. Those are perfect questions mm-hmm. to ask. But those are some general responses to that.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, Kay. Thank you for calling. Appreciate it. And Dana in Cottage Grove. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi there. I have a 10-year-old son who is not in any organized sports, but he is a 100-mile-an-hour kid all the time. And he's got some what's been diagnosed as Osgood-Schlatter's, that's the attachment of his kneecap tendon.
Mm-hmm.
And he has pretty frequent pain, just like in gym class and things like that. And I'm just wondering if there's anything that would help that, either some of these, I've seen some patellar wraps around it or the kinesio tape at the insertion, if anything else that could help him alleviate some of that until he's done growing.
Well, you know, typically we tell kids their activity should be limited by their pain. So if they're having pain, they need to back off. It says that they're doing too much. I hesitate to do a lot of intervention to allow them to be more active when things are flaring up because it's kind of your knee telling you you're doing too much. So typically we have them stretch as a big piece of that, stretching their quadriceps on a daily, regular basis. Okay. And then finding things that they can do so they can stay active because you want them to be active. You don't want them to be, you know, couch potatoes, but finding things mm-hmm. that they can do. And those are generally non-impact kinds of activities, you know, swimming, possibly biking or things like that. So you certainly could see a physical therapist and look at kinesio taping as a possibility for this. But again, I wouldn't want to use that so that he could be too active. Do you know what I mean?
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So what would be the, let's say he is too active, kind of what's the, what happens with that? Down the road,
typically nothing. You know, they end up with kind of a knob on the front of their knee, but it's very rare that anything worse than that happens. You know, we're more concerned about the kids who are jumping because they can avulse their tibial tubercle, but it's pretty rare. So if he's not in an organized sport, it's unlikely that he's going to do anything to hurt himself.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks for your time.
You betcha.
Thanks for calling. Carol in Crandon. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hello, thank you. In the last 2 months, I have had, off and on during the day and sometimes in, when I'm sleeping, some pain that will radiate down my thumb. And this is not on the front side of my hand, but it's, you know, down from my thumb. You know, in my wrist area, on the right side of my wrist. Now, I'm pretty active. I lift light weights 3 or 4 times a week, and I have an exercise bike, and I don't feel any pain while I'm exercising, but this is a new discomfort for me. I don't, you know, use a computer, but I notice some repetitive motions. Occasionally I'll have this sharp pain, and sometimes I won't be doing anything and I will have this sharp radiating pain that's very short-lived, but that's a new discomfort for me. I wonder, I haven't had any injuries or fallen or done anything unusual to my hand or my arm. I wonder if there's some exercises or something that I can do that might, you know, help
the situation.
Sure.
Yeah, our thumbs are pretty important. We don't want to mess with those for very long. Carol, besides the sharp pain that comes periodically, any other symptoms like numbness or tingling that you've noted in that hand?
No. Now, the pain isn't in my thumb, but, you know, it's down from my thumb at the wrist area.
Well, that's a pretty common area for arthritis to develop, and that is most likely what you have, especially without having any kind of injury or accident. And what I'd recommend, since it's been a couple months, you probably want to get this looked at. There may be some exercises they can give you, some way to self-mobilize the joint to give a little more mobility. It may be that you need a splint for certain activities to protect that joint. Mm-hmm. And so if you saw a therapist, and depending on the clinic, it might be a physical therapist, an occupational therapist that has hand specialty. Mm-hmm. But if time was going to take care of this by itself, it'd be gone by now. And it can really become debilitating if it's not managed well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's also on the outside of your wrist there, relative to your thumb, a tendonitis you can get called de Quer vein, tenosynovitis. So it could be a tendon issue too. So I think Bill's absolutely right. Getting it looked at so that you get the right treatment for it makes good sense.
Mm-hmm. There we go. Thank you very much for calling. Jackie in Lake Villa, Illinois. Hi, Jackie.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm 59. Last June, I slipped in the grocery store, and I was holding the cart. My right leg flew forward, and my left leg just stayed where it was, and I didn't fall, and I was like, oh, thank God. But a couple days later, my left knee was swelling and a little bit painful. So I thought, well, I probably wrenched it, no big deal. You know, I'm very healthy. I don't take any medicines. To make a long story short, by last October, I finally went to the doctor, and they did x-rays, nothing, MRI, no tear, thank God, and they wanted to give me a shot of cortisone, and I refused because I did not know anything about this cortisone, and I was a little reluctant, and I thought, well, if there's nothing wrong, hopefully it'll heal up on its own, and with, you know, now I'm 59, so maybe it takes a little bit longer, but it is still bothering me, and I just wondered if I should have taken that shot of cortisone.
Well, I guess I don't know why they would give you a shot of cortisone if there was nothing wrong with your knee. So I'm kind of thinking along the same lines that you are. You know, if you have, typically they give you cortisone because your knee is swollen. Your knee is swollen for a reason. Knees don't just swell for no reason. So
I do have arthritis. But I'm sorry, I forgot to tell you that. And I did see that, but I have never in my life ever had any problems, no pain in my knees ever. And I'm very physical.
Okay. Well, you know, how bad was the arthritis? Did they label it?
Yeah, they said, oh, you have some bad arthritis. And I was diagnosed with RA a long time ago, but it doesn't bother me, so I don't take any medicines. I'd rather not.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, given that information, I might go with a cortisone injection, because if you have rheumatoid arthritis, and even if it hasn't reared its ugly head for most of your joints, that trauma to it may have been enough to stir the pot, and the underlying pathology now perpetuates your symptoms. So sometimes a cortisone injection can beat the inflammation back down, and you really don't want to have an inflamed knee for months on end. It's unhealthy for your knee joint. The cells that are present in an inflammation are unhealthy for the joint surfaces. So have you been to physical therapy at all?
I have not.
Yeah, well.
I'm retired, and they just said, well, give it a couple more months, and it should
be better,
but I've noticed.
No. It's, you know, if you injured it in June and you're still symptomatic in October, and it's now February and you're still symptomatic, no. So my recommendation would be for you to go see a physical therapist, have your knee examined, have someone look at it, and they can give you better information about what they think would be the right course of treatment from here on out. You might try some physical therapy. You might try some strengthening, some mobility, maybe some exercise in a pool to try to get yourself back on track. And if you're not able to turn the corner with those measures, then you can revisit the idea of an injection.
I'd revisit it sooner rather than later from the sound of it, but
Well, it's hard to know without looking at the knee. Is it warm? Is it red? Is it swollen? If it's swollen all the time, you really want to get the swelling out of there. You know,
and the PT can help you with that decision too, Jackie. Based on their knee exam, about if they sense that there's some underlying inflammation that may benefit from the injection. But at this stage, a physical therapist, they'll look at your knee, they'll look at your foot and ankle mechanics and posture, and try to figure out why you haven't recovered from this, and then give you a good program that you can do on your own.
Yeah, there you go. Good luck. Thank you.
I appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. And Pete in Reedfield, hi, thank you for calling.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing. What's on your mind?
Photodynamic therapy. I'm curious if either of the PTs have experience or opinion about cold laser. I'm an old dog veterinary scientist, and I've done fat-derived stem cell injections in dogs, and the use of class 4 therapeutic lasers is quite a cost center, if you will. It's a moneymaker for veterinarians. 80% of veterinarians in Japan use it, and veterinary medicine tends to be quite liberal in terms of innovations, that when it comes to doing experimental stuff, we're more inclined to say, well, let's try this, whereas if it's you or your son, it's not like you
got different standards. You
know, right.
So, cold laser therapy for joint issues.
Well, I know there are some practitioners who use it. I think you're right, Pete. It's probably used more in other countries than it is here in the U.S. I'm not aware of any hard science supporting it use related to any particular joint or injury or muscle or tendon injury.
I'm actually familiar with the science. I've got a veterinary degree and a PhD, and there's a man by the name of Michael Hamlin who's got a joint appointment at Harvard and MIT. They've got an entire photodynamic center, and there's so many snake oil salesmen out there, and so to buy a class 4 laser would cost me $30,000.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And so
Well, like I said, I'm not aware of any literature related to using it for a particular type of injury, whether it's joint or muscle or tendon. And this was probably about 5 to 10 years ago. I heard a lot more about it being used in a clinic, and to be honest, I have not heard that come up in the last couple of years in discussions that I've had with colleagues.
Yeah.
The reason I contacted you is because some of the snake oil salesmen sell these devices to athletic teams. Mm-hmm. And so the last talk that I heard, the veterinarian said, well, I just got out of the New York Rangers locker room, and there's they're used by the Brewers, evidently. There's a company, I can't remember the name, their animal product is like companion animal laser, and they come out of Delaware, and their human arm of it, and it's a bad pun, but they treat baseball players with the Brewers using cold laser. And so, you know, I think...
I agree with Bill. I don't think there's a lot of science out there to support that, or really most of the other modalities, as anything other than an adjunct to our treatment. So, you know, does it speed healing in the context of other interventions that we would use to treat traditional musculoskeletal injuries? I don't know. Most of the time, I guess my sense is the other interventions that we use, whether it's manual therapy or exercise or something like that, are so robust that any additional value of something like a cold laser tends to get lost.
And it's not going to hurt you, or is it?
Well, I think there's minimal downside. It's compared to other things, it is relatively safe. But then again, coming back to what Lori's comment, then the value would be more as an adjunct. Done in isolation probably has very little value.
No.
Yeah. Well, I really appreciate you taking my call, and I just wanted to plant the seed, because the cellular physiologic narrative that they say is that all energy on the planet comes from photons from the sun. And they contend that the chloroplast equivalent in our body, which is a mitochondria, gets turned on to hyperdrive. And so by focusing the laser, and there's an Italian company, and like you said, this is more accepted in Europe, but there's a pulsatile thing. I mean, there's a lot of mumbo-jumbo that goes with this.
Yeah, you know, once you start talking about mitochondria, most people's eyes glaze over and they think, well, whatever they're saying must be right because it's the mitochondria.
Right.
Yeah. So, well, Pete, thank you for bringing that up, Pete.
Yeah, Pete, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. We have, Lisa in Appleton, do you have a quick question?
Hi, yeah, probably a quick question. Back in October, I broke a little bone in my fifth metatarsal. I missed a step and rolled my foot, and I was super happy I didn't have to get pins or anything, and it healed really well. But it still gets sore on the bottom of my foot, and I'm just wondering, what's still healing there? The doctor said the bones look like they were doing what they were supposed to do.
Yeah.
Okay, well, as long as you have radiographs that show that the bone is healing, because that's a place where you have a lot of non-union, so... just make sure the bone is healing. The other side of that is you had an injury that was significant enough to fracture a bone. Your focus has been on the bone, but you may have sustained some other soft tissue damage at the time of the original fracture that needs to be addressed. And you could see a physical therapist who specializes in foot and ankle and have them take a look at it and see if they can see anything.
And with that, we're out of time. Thanks, Lisa and Lori and Bill. Thank you so much. You're back again.
Sure.
Oh, in a month.
March 23rd. We'll do it all over again.
We will.
Awesome.
All right. Bill Boys and Alden, Lori Tyne Brody, our guests. They'll be back on March 23rd, and we will visit with them once again. Phil Pelletieri joins us tomorrow on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Stay with us.